to take an intro.
Well, why don't you get your favorite hanging on there? How about this one? You like this one?
Oh, yeah, that one's pretty.
That's pretty right there. Now, come here, let me show you something. I like the Blue Balls.
Nueve. Blue Balls NYCFC. Season 9.
I like the Blue Balls. The Blue Balls.
Nueve.
Blue Balls.
Season 9. Nueve.
Like Hal 9000, but at this one, he's nice. Ladies and gentlemen, you've got Blue Balls. My name is Jake Beckard, and I am your intrepid co-host, and I am joined by my intrepid co-host, Mr. Trey Fillmore. Trey, how are you this week?
That was a good one. That was one of the best of the new season.
Thank you. Thanks a lot. Yeah, you sort of, I'm working in the theater of your imagination, you know, the theater of the mind that is the providence of podcasting. It's a canvas, a blank canvas upon which either of us can paint. See, you know, you don't know what we look like probably, but you have an idea in your mind. And if I tell you I'm on a surfboard right now, you're imagining it. I am surfing on a surfboard. I'm catching a huge wave. And so is Trey. He's right behind me. Isn't that right, Trey?
Yeah, I'm also on a surfboard, but mine is much cooler and I'm doing tricks.
Cool. What's one trick? What's one surf trick?
Hit the lip.
Wow, I've never seen someone hit the lip so hard. You really hit it right in the lip.
Speaking of, man, if you're in chat right now, I want you to throw up, you know, tongues out for the Dalai Lama boys. Let me hear you in chat.
What is this? Yeah, hold on. I only saw a tweet referencing this. I didn't actually look it up. What happened with the Dalai Lama?
He
I saw his Notes app apology.
Yeah, freaking woke culture is trying to cancel our dear reincarnation of the Bodhisattva because he wanted to make out with a little boy.
He wanted to make out with a little boy?
I don't know. He like kissed the boy on the lips, and apparently that's like normal. And then the Dalai Lama was like, oh, no, but he asked me to. A real she was asking for a moment. And I don't know. It did not look like the boy was asking for anything,
to
be honest.
Well, that's the confusing thing is that the Notes app said, like, sometimes the Dalai Lama teases people. And it's like, what do you mean?
He's like teasing striptease?
Maybe. Yeah, sure. He's being a little tease. Maybe that's he thought that was the problem. He thought that the problem was that he was being kind of a tease and that he shouldn't flirt. He should put up or shut up.
I'm frightened that to reach salvation or whatever it's called. What is it?
Nirvana?
Yes. That I'm going to have to start finding some boys to kiss.
I guess, yeah.
Okay,
we got to follow the model. How you pass on? How you pass on the Dalai Lama? Because it's just, you know, it's just some kid. It's not the same. It's not lineage. The Dalai Lama doesn't have any children who become the new Dalai Lama. They just find some guy, and that guy turns out to be the Dalai Lama.
Yeah, you pass that on and oral herpes.
Trey, let's talk about soccer.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I apologize for turning this podcast into a late night talk show, apparently.
I know, it really is. That's fucking Craig Ferguson 101.
It's on at the same time.
Like, late night shit has been coming up on my TikTok a lot lately. What were you saying? And it is fucking 11 o'clock.
Exactly. And also, don't ever fucking put Craig Ferguson and bad comedy in the same mouth. You heathen.
I know, you were the one who really advocated for Craig Ferguson back in the day. You would give anybody an earful who was listening.
Yeah, he's
with the skeleton,
fantastic.
All his bits, all his goofy shit.
We need more Dadaism in late night comedy. What happened?
And less James Corden.
Yeah, the opposite.
Are you sad? Are you sad about carpool karaoke being canceled?
Less. More, wait, more Dadaism, less Gagaism. That's what I was going for. Okay.
Wow, very good. I guess is something that somebody might say around, like, 2010.
Yes, okay, I know, I can't stop. What is happening?
Jiminy Glick, that's who I want to bring back. Give me the Jiminy Glick show again.
man, that might be too old for our audience. I think it is.
I don't think so. Maybe. They've all seen it. I don't think so. I think our audience is exactly our age, except for the handful of you who have introduced yourselves at bars.
They're a teeny, teeny, tiny bit younger, on average.
Mm-hmm.
On average, we're about...
So you're saying maybe they didn't grow up with the Man Show on Comedy Central?
They probably did, and, you know, like, snuck late on their TV in their room or whatever and watched it, whatever.
Watched Girls on Trampolines or what have you.
Frankly,
it was truly Dadaism. A cultural high point. Yeah, is the Man Show Dadaist?
That part is, yes.
Or is it Dadaist?
Ooh, okay, we can't beat that.
Dre! Ugh, I mean, there's a reason that we're kicking this around so long. Who wants to talk about this fucking 1-1 draw? Boy, howdy. I don't know. The longer I sit with it, the less pleased with it I feel. This is a 1-1 draw after a significant amount of time up a man on Atlanta United. Trey, did you see... Did this give you cause for concern, this match?
A little. Let's start by saying this. In general, vibes are off. Is that fair?
Sure. Like, with the exception of the weather, where vibes are perfect.
You know, I think the Houston game was the worst, where a lot of pointing fingers and yelling and stuff, and obviously, like, normal sports. Normal stuff, I will never freak out about players pointing, telling each other what to do, maybe getting angry once or twice in a game. Not a problem. And Houston wasn't really that bad. Like, I think there's a difference between a lot of pointing and shouting at each other and stuff, and that plus being in bad spirit and, like, actual scornfulness. I think there's a line between those things. And I think that this team has definitely not crossed that line. I wasn't concerned. I was concerned, but I wasn't, like, panicking about body language and energy and things. This game kind of brought some of that back. A lot of it in the first half. Like, you know, it's nice being at the stadium. You get the full view of all the players and just constant miscommunication and clarification needed between all parties, frankly. Thiago Martins does a lot of the conducting on the field. James Sands was trying to, like, make things happen. A lot of Santi Rodriguez and Keaton talk. You know, talk is good, communication's good, but it gets to, like, a frustration. Like, when it tips into frustration more often than not, that's when I get a little concerned. And, like, I would just say, like, that's the vibe right now.
Is that what you were saying? People talking past each other rather than talking to each other?
No, more like people talking at each other as opposed to talking to each other. I think that's the vibe I was picking up. I clocked it in Houston. I didn't talk about it because I wasn't, like, concerned. Like, I wasn't worried that it was, like, in bad spirit. But now it's at a point where it's like, okay, now we're doing this again. Like, we got to, like, fucking lock in. Like, we had a week. You know the game plan. We're at home. And this was before and after we were up a man. So it's like, what's the point of practice and meetings and all these things if everyone is confused on the field? And that's the sense I got. And, you know, that's fine. Look, you said the more you think about it, the more concerned you get. Yeah, that was less than ideal, and it should have been a win. And that sucks, right? But there's a lot of things that we expected that happened that aren't necessarily the highest concern, unless you're, like, a freak that thinks your team should be the best team on the planet, and if they're not, they're trash. Like, I think we've done enough to, I don't know, that's not my expectation, and that's I'm definitely not accusing our audience of thinking that way either, but I it's just, like, keeping in mind things like Almada and Araujo, like, waltzing through our midfield. I expected that, and it happened a lot, and I expected it. They're good. They're better than the players we have, so that's gonna happen. So you have to take, like, the good things. Like, I would say a good surprise that we pointed out last week, tweeted it out, and now it's a continuing thing, is that this team is good defensively. We're one of the best, you know, in expected goals against. We're like top six, and non-penalty expected goals, we're like top four. Like, that's good. Good defense. We love good defense. And it's still happening. And you, if you get Giacomakis and Araujo and Almada running at you, like, that's one of the worst three-headed beasts in this league. And they really couldn't do too much once they got close to the box. That's good. But when you go up a man, and when you are at home, where you look dominant the last two times you played there, you got to do better. And you have to be switched on the whole game. And that's the biggest story of the game, was that, you know, opportunities lost.
I think that that's right. I mean, it's and it's not just opportunities lost on a, like, moment-to-moment level, but opportunities lost in... opportunities never arriving, right? Like, opportunities impossible to generate a lot of the time. It wasn't just sort of, like, dead ball giveaways. It was also, like... I don't know. It seemed like confusion, disorientation on the field, a sense of, like, maybe there were, like, different multiple game plans trying to be executed in this moment. And I think it didn't help that, right, like, because, of course, this the red card also caused an upending in structure, right? Like, it's one thing to go up a man, but it's another thing to go up a man without a fully functional James Sands, you know? All of a sudden, I think, and I think that the process of recovery from that, the reconstituting, and then also figuring out, okay, how do we then take advantage of the advantage, wasn't there. I mean, just looking at possession, like, if you're going to be up on somebody for 28 minutes plus extra time, there's no way that the possession should look the way that it does. You know, it's, unless you are not pushing your offensive advantage, unless you're not crunching in. And then to see a goal that's functionally off of a set piece.
Mm-hmm.
You can argue, I guess, that set pieces, like, are where you can get goals if you don't have the manpower. But on the other hand, it seems like, right, like, that's the set, that those are the set pieces we should be particularly good at defending, if all it is just knowing where everybody is. You have one less person to account for total, you know?
Yeah. Right.
It seems bonkers, but it also but not just bonkers, it seems disorganized, and it has me concerned. In as much as I am concerned, I'm concerned level. I understand there are multiple things happening here, but I'm a little worried. I think that Cushing has done a solid job experimenting with plan A's, you know, finding the best possible plan A and deploying it and being willing to be flexible about what the plan A is. I'm not as convinced that he has a solid eye or a solid grounding for plan B's and plan C's, because that's what was just completely absent from this match here. We didn't know what we were doing. We were totally idealists. It wasn't just the chemistry between the players. We had no good car ideas. Do you know?
Yeah. Okay, you know, we're eternal optimists and whatever, and we always have been, but we do need to vent a little bit, okay? Just let a little steam out so we can keep being optimistic. And you said, like, there's no plan B's and C's. I don't know if there's any... A solid plan A being instituted right at this moment, right? Because, you know, former guest of the podcast, Dummy Run, I mean, John Mueller, he wrote a piece he wrote an article for The Athletic about Pep Guardiola of City Football Group, but also pre-City Football Group Pep, how he changed his approach to playing Thomas Tuchel the last four times they faced each other on different teams. And it's fascinating. And You should read it if you can. If you're not subscribed to The Outfield, send me a DM. I'll send you that piece. You know what I'm saying? Don't tell John that. But it's fascinating how the most particular part of the article, and perhaps like the most forward-facing part of it, is how Pep adjusts the build-up, the real first phase of the build-up, to deal with Thomas Tuchel's press every time they faced it. And I think there's things I appreciate about Cushing. Like, I think he is flexible, and I think that he does adjust to what opponents do and changes that game plan, because I think it's different to, this isn't one-to-one. Like, I'm not criticizing, you know, because that article focuses on one coach against one playing style, and Cushing has to deal with different playing styles and different rosters every week. But like, finding the buildup that works best, and the pair, like, we have Keaton and Sands and Thiago and Chanel a majority of the time. And it's like, why, if you have that consistency, why are we not finding something that works? And as you say, like, when you do have something that works, then you automatically have to start working on plan B's and C's, like, because that's what tactics is. It's, you pass to your fucking single pivot, and then if the one pass isn't available, you have another one lined up, and like, that is not happening. And that leaves me a little concerned, especially like, combine that with the fact that the players are all just fucking trying to tell each other what to do. It's early in the season. It's salad days, but this coach has been with these players for years and has been the leader of this team for, you know, months, and had a full preseason, and he's going to say he didn't have Santi and he didn't have James Sands. Well, I'm sorry, you had 20 plus other players since day one. And it's like, do you have a system or not? I don't know. And, you know, if you're waiting on players to institute a system, that's fine too. Well, then, you know, then you have to simplify and fucking, you know, do what you got to do. Like, and I don't want to be overly critical, because what, and here's the optimist, what we did in the first half worked. I know we didn't look like the better team in the first half, but guess what? If the other team is better than you, it's hard to look like the better team. And we had a better game plan. We pressed the fuck out of them. The press of anything that's looked good this season, it's been the defense from open play, and Santi being inserted to the lineup and pressing better than he's pressed time before on this team, and Pellegrini also contributing to the press extremely well. Like, that changes the game. And when you press a team like Atlanta constantly and constantly, it's been their Achilles heel for years, and you can cause mistakes. And then by the end of the game, they were just by the end of the first half, they were trying to be direct. It wasn't working. We got the ball, and that's when our buildup worked, was after the attrition. So I think the game plan worked well. So I don't want to be overly critical when it comes to like Cushing's A. I just would rather see like a more solid game plan. I don't know. I like what he did in this game tactically, after all the shit I said about not being convinced about his tactics. I just think there's more room to grow when you say you want to impose your style on opponents. And every time I fucking ask him what he's going to plan differently for the next opponent, he says, we're going to play our game. I'm like, what is our game? Like, I saw what you tried to do in this game and it worked, but once we had 11 men, 11 to 10, what was our game? I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because all of a sudden it was up to us. Do you know what I mean? All of a sudden it was our job to dictate the game. Though I feel like you see this over and over and over again, right? It's the dog that caught the car. It's a little bit of the problem in football, because people are more comfortable being the underdog and drill that harder and understand the urgency of that, I think. Though that's just, you know, that's armchair analysis. It's a psychological analysis. But I totally agree with you. I think that I think that he's a coach that likes to be reactive. I think that he likes to, like, play, like identify weaknesses in like structural weaknesses in the opponent's games, and then set up his game accordingly. But that's responsive, and then when you are in control, like really in control, and you can dictate the way that the game is going to go, if you're no longer responding to anything but rather dictating, and then you don't have the characters on the field who are going to be able to do that without explicit instruction from you, or thoughtful, mm-hmm. like savvy instruction from you, which in this case we don't, right? Like, he's right in that sense. Santi Rodriguez can show you how to play the game, but not everybody on that field can. Then he's caught the car, and he's like, okay, so what do I do now? It's troubling.
I mean, it's indecisiveness.
Yeah.
It's finishing last year with 5 in the bank and barely touching it this year. It's starting Talish Magno at the 9 and getting rid of him and putting him on the wing, and starting Gabe Siegel and saying that you depend on having Sands and Santi, but like, I don't know, sometimes you won't have them. They might get injured, or like, it's a lot of reactivity, as you said. It's things happen, but we've been relatively healthy and we've been together. You know, we lost Tati and Callens and Sean Johnson, and we're coping well without Callens and Sean Johnson, which is insane to say, but like, it's a good thing. It's good insane. But pulling the trigger in the final third is like obviously like the biggest concern. Like, it's just like that's the game where it rooted its head. But like, let's get to more specifically what you said. You said switching off or disconnectivity or whatever. Like, that's what that goal was that we allowed. You're up a man. You give away a set piece. Oh my God, here we go again. NYCFC in 2023 giving up a set piece or giving up a foul that leads to a set piece. Giving up a corner or a foul that leads to a set piece. And what happens? We give up goals mm-hmm. more than anyone else in the league from these fucking opportunities. We're putting our fucking team in an awful position. Like, if you can be the better team from open play, then like these brief moments, you're fucking everything up, and that's gonna destroy team morale. And it is mm-hmm. like, these guys aren't happy, and it sucks, and they have to react to that. But like, where's the focus? Why did the team fucking shut down when the ball was going to the end line? You have to win the game. It's 0-0. The ball is going to the end line from a corner and no one's running towards it. Why assume it's going out? Fucking play to the whistle. Like, that's man management. And that's missing right now. What are we doing?
It's unclear.
I really fucking hate it. It sucks. It sucks that, like, who's been one of the best players on this team this season? Barraza. He's been super fucking valuable. He was great in this match. He makes really difficult saves. And we're setting him up for failure. It sucks.
Do you think... I mean, moving the action back to the field for a second. I guess I want to talk about the... About what this team looked like without James Sands. Not just, like, in its own, like, general sort of discombobulation, but, like... You know, what do you lose when you not just move James Sands back to the defensive position, but when you lose him entirely, you know, when he goes down? Because I think that was extremely highlighted in this moment. And it seems like he's going to be okay. I mean, he's got the U.S. men's call-up, which seems, I don't know, at least to suggest that he's in good enough shape that they weren't worried in making that call. Assurances were made. Or whatever. But was there any meaningful adjustment following that, like following that substitution? I mean, what did we see from Richie? What did we see from Alfredo Morales back on the field? Like, did any of our substitutions make any kind of impact at all that you saw that could eventually develop into a kind of cohesiveness on a B side?
Yeah, I think that Gabriel Pereira kid, he might be pretty good. firstly, I talked to Sands when he was on the medical cart going to medical to get a scan, and I talked to him when he came back, and he told me that the scan came back clean, no breaks, nothing. He was super positive. He was like, "I think I'll be okay." He couched it as, "I think I'll be okay," like as if like the team was a little more concerned about his injury than he was, which I guess is a good sign, but also every athlete is like that. But he seemed good. He seemed in good spirits. He was obviously in pain. Also, that fucking foul, like, I heard that from very far away, and it sounded like
the Wilhelm
Atlanta
scream.
Player, Ibarra, it sounded like he kicked the ball, but it was actually James Sands' fucking ankle. It was like a fucking gunshot. It was awful. And shout out to the ref for actually getting that right.
Eventually.
On VAR, eventually. But that's what it's for. So when you miss these things, I think missing James Sands changes the game offensively and defensively. Offensively, you're missing that release valve. You're missing James Sands is super active in the initial stages of our buildup. He, it's going around that Tiago Martins had been the most progressive defender in MLS, especially in that game. That's good. That's what we've had with Alex Callens that we've been missing. And it allows James Sands to work at the same level as like as someone to, rotate in space with him to, keep passing lanes open and whatever. And also when Keaton Parks has the ball you'll see them kind of hover around each other, rotate around each other to be good outlets. What we need to happen is more people in the offense to work back with those guys and create something. But that's what you miss. You miss that he's a great elbow, not in terms of elbow back, but in terms of like as an angular change offensively when you need it. Obviously, it's not like his strong suit, and he's not known to be like a stellar passer or progressor of the ball, but it's something he can do, and it's something we need him to do. More importantly, is you miss the best one-on-one man marker on the field. You miss a guy who can mark the best player, Carlos Gil. Pick your fucking scary number 10. Almada had a pretty quiet game until James Sands went away. He was obviously still very good at moving the ball around, but was really mitigated by James Sands' presence. So that's, more importantly to me, we're going against Nashville yet again and Hani Mukhtar yet again. It would be nice to have James Sands on the field, and I hope we do.
Do you think it's likely? It sounds likely.
I don't know. They might be cautious, but seeing as it was a more of an impact injury than a muscle strain or something, sounds like it's something you could fight through. Yeah.
Do you think that GP made an argument to start him?
Yeah, here's another gripe I got. Here's a problem. I don't know what Nick Cushing sees or doesn't see, and I don't want him to fucking get on my ass like he did with Mike Allen. I still believe Nick Cushing is a good coach and very smart coach, and every week we go through all the good decisions he makes. But telling me that GP did not start against New England as a fatigue issue and then didn't start the next game after a week of rest is giving me mixed messages. And I commend the decision to bench GP. Frankly, I wish he didn't lie to me. And when he said it was a rest issue in New England, I wish he said he's been bad. Now, obviously he's not going to say that, but...
But that would have been a fun new step in your relationship.
Yeah, true. But he said the right thing, but I could tell what he meant, and it was the right decision. GP should have been benched against New England. He was arguably our worst player on the field for the first part of the season. But guess what? He gets benched. Then, I don't know why he didn't fucking start this game. He's still one of our more talented players, even if he's playing like trash. Okay, he's on the bench. Then he comes back in, instant offense. Why? Because GP's the only one on the field that pulls the trigger. He's the only one that shoots. And Richie Ledesma, too. You mentioned him and his impact. Didn't have much of an impact. I think it had a lot to do with the disorganization and the fact that when you're playing up a man, you're just caught. I'm speaking for our team, but a lot of teams get caught just, you know, pissing the ball around between their center backs and their wing backs until they see an opening, right? Like, he's not going to get many touches on a 11-on-10 situation. He had an opportunity. I mean, this game was close. Talis Magno, if he just reacted a fucking eyelash hair faster, we would have won that game in the last second, but that sucks. But I think GP's instant offense, and he should be starting every game. And I understand what Pellegrini gives. Time is a flat circle, my dude. Remember we were comparing Pellegrini to Jesus Medina? Remember who Jesus Medina was starting over? Izzy Tajiri Shradi, a right winger with a fucking insane left foot.
Yeah, and could score goals.
And seems like we're in not a one-for-one, but I'm seeing the resemblance. Like, I appreciate Pellegrini's ability to run a lot and defend well, but offensively it's a negative. It's not just nothing. It's negative. He's not decisive. He doesn't make any creative passes ever. He, you know, I'm not seeing it. Sorry. Maybe 2 years in MLS, you know, 2.5 years in MLS is, you know, maybe we're missing something. But I feel like I don't know how much more there is to see. Like, I understand what he is. I don't know. That's a trigger I pull. Like, I don't care. Nick Cushing's brought up his training metrics three times. How fast he is and how much ground he covers. His GPS is through the roof. Like, I love that. And coaches absolutely fucking love players like that. Players that run hard all the time. But, like, we got to score goals, baby. It's not good. We're in the bottom third of the league in expected goals.
Yeah, I don't think it's... I think that's the... It's a boring note to sit on or to end this game wrap-up with. But, like... But that's the thing, that there's been no... I think it's the most... In some ways, the fact that it was a draw is the most frustrating thing about it, because, like, that... Just that one goal... That, like, which the elegance demonstrated, right? The, like, coming out swinging thing is like, okay, this is the best idea we've got. So build on it, you know? Build on Pereira and come up with some other shit in the meantime. We've got to put more shots on target. We've got to put more people with a hunger for the goal on the field and for longer, you know? It's turning into that thing. That ugly thing that NYCFC goes through phases of, where no one can really actually find their way to a reasonable... No one can generate not just goals, but expected goals. Do you know what I mean? I'm using a quantitative thing to measure something that I'm really experiencing as qualitative, which is to say nobody's threatening or that it's impossible. We're not creating threatening chances. There's a haplessness up front. That has to end. It has to end, one way or another. Is there anything else to cover in this match, Trey?
Just my last time as a flat circle moment. If you remember down in Miami a few years ago, Gary Mackay-Steven ended the career of Robles, the goalkeeper, MLS legend, longtime Red Bull goalkeeper, by colliding into him and breaking his arm. And then in this game, we get Gabe Siegel colliding into Brad Guzan and fucking up his MCL. So it sounds like he might be healthy enough to finish the season, but I don't know, man.
Was it clear to you, Trey, why people were booing Guzan after he went down?
I think because he went down for so long that it felt... egregious. He was down for a long time, and then kept playing. If you're gonna go down that long, I assume you're really hurt and you're gonna go off. And guess what? It was a weird mixed situation where he was very hurt, and it's understandable why he went down that long. And it's insane that he kept playing. Kudos to him. Like, yeah, that's a great Brett. Now that we're past it, that's a fucking legendary. If that's his last professional performance, and knowing Brad Guzan, I doubt it will be. We'll probably see him somewhere. He's going to keep playing till the wheels fall off, as they almost did in this game. But if that is his last game, that's a great way to fucking go out. It's like playing on a MCL and you know, only allowing a GP screamer at the end of the game.
Shall we do some talking points, Trey?
But that's it. Yeah, let's do it.
Boom.
Talking points. Talking points. Talking points. Talking points. Talking points. Talking points.
And them's the Talking Points theme song. That right there, those are the notes that create the Talking Points theme song, and these are your talking points. Not much on the docket today, Trey. I'll be quite honest with you. We could talk about Stephen Turnbull. We could talk about James Sands and the U.S. men's national team. And if you think that's a good sign of anything, as I alluded to earlier, let's start with Turnbull first. Listen, every signing that isn't a striker is going to drive people crazy. But is there value to this defender and his addition to the team? Big sigh. This profound sigh.
Look, I like Turnbull. I've run into him now a lot because when he's not listed on the bench, he'll come hang out, get food in the press box, whatever. So unfortunately, I can't use any of the fun nicknames I had for him before. I don't want to get him back to him. No one tell him. They're great. I'm sad I have to retire them. Anyways, nice guy. This whole thing, it revolves around the maddening situation of Melda Amundsen. And what the fuck is going on? Like, there's some very clear things, right? He's out of favor with the coach. Coach prefers other players. Like, why would you sign another back like that when you have him, when you have Amundsen? The reason we're signing Turnbull is that we already used up all of his emergency loans from NYCFC 2. So we have to sign him. I mean, we don't have to sign him, right? That's the whole thing. We have Amundsen. He's making a fair amount of money. I believe he might have had his green card. I'm not entirely sure. But it's clear he's not going to see another minute for this team. Maybe a cup, US Open Cup, even though I think we'll run kids out. Like, Benal Kazar will probably get run out before we see Amundsen again. It's insane to me. I mean, a lot of our backups played in the NYCFC 2 game this past weekend. Freeze, Kevin O'Toole, Andres Jason, Justin Hack, and Kwaku. And they all look great. They all played really well. Amundsen wasn't there, as far as I can remember. It's like, what are we doing with him? And there's another... So, like, my whole thing is, like, loan... Can we fucking end his suffering and loan him somewhere? There's no one willing to take on... Can we pay some of that? I know we don't get the international slot or something back if we don't take his full salary or don't give away his full salary or something, whatever. But fucking let him play soccer. like loan him somewhere. And so here's conspiracy theory, Trey, coming out. I didn't prepare for this. So you give me your thoughts before I pull up the quotes. On Turnbull, whatever.
I got no thoughts. I don't know anything about...
Fuck you. You have thoughts. You can invent thoughts.
I can certainly invent thoughts, but they're not going to be valuable thoughts to you or our audience. But, I mean, ultimately, I'm just like... It feels like we're stocking up. I can't really conceive of it outside of, like, retaining depth for the defensive line, right? Like, I can't conceive of it outside of, like, we've got a good thing going, and so why don't we solidify it? It's funny that we talk about, you know, the struggle with a plan B, but then, like, you know, on the flip side, depth signings appear to be most of the signings that we make, right? Like, we're not... I think that that's just standard for how you run a football team. You can't, like... You can't sign exceptional talent who will be plug-and-play players for your team, generally. But my first feeling is just, okay, great. Unremarkable. It's an unremarkable choice that will ensure that we are still solid and that we're still doing the, like, exceptional defending work that we're doing. the samples we've seen seems like good minutes. I don't know. What are the quotes?
Okay. Did you find here's them? My Yeah. So two players that had fallen out of favor, apparently. And here's how Nick Cushing talked about both of them. On Melda Amundsen, he's frustrated. He's training really hard. In football, things change quickly. I have so much respect for the guy. It's a hard place to be. I've spoken with him. So that's what he said about Melda. Pretty nice things to say about a player you've relegated to fifth or sixth on the depth chart. Here's on Thiago Andrade. Recruitment's an ongoing process, and that's ins and outs. I want to win. Whether it's bringing in the next guy or someone leaving, it's for the better of the team. That sounds like, fuck that guy. So, firstly, that shows, obviously, something's up with the whole Thiago thing. I don't know what happened. I don't know why Nick Cushing can't even say, like, he was a good player, or we were happy to have him, or we're excited when he comes back from loan. Like, there was zero. Nothing. He didn't even say his name. I mean, it was weird. But when it comes to Melda, with how glowing it was, we already loaned out Thiago. I think maybe he's gassing him up a little bit because we're trying to get a little trade going or trying to fish him for a loan. Like, you don't want to... You're not going to say, like, oh, you know, if someone's like, what's up with Melda Amundsen? If you're coach, you're not going to say, you know, it's ins and outs and we'll make a move that's best for the team. When he's on the bench, you know, we're making moves best for the team, and it's an ongoing process. Like, that's not going to do well for his stock. If you're someone, another team, you're not going to go like, ooh, I don't know if I want that guy. But if you say things like, ooh, he's training really hard, he's a great guy, ooh, I just wish we could find some minutes for him, ooh, it's so hard because he's so good and I wish we could do it. Like, that sounds like a coach that wants to get his player loaned out to someone else or traded. That's my conspiracy theory, okay?
I think that's a great conspiracy theory. I think that's really reading between the lines. I'm excited about that because I think that you're right. I think sometimes, and like, these coaches are not impervious to this shit, right? Like, they're not. Their feelings are going to come out one way or another. That you're going to take swings at people who are making your life more difficult, and you're going to try to, like, look out for people who you like or you think have... I mean, you know, there's, on the other hand, a sincere belief in those players, and, like, positive reinforcement publicly is also a tactic for getting people to perform on the practice field. But I don't know. On this side, I tend to think you're right. What else? What else? What else is in the news, Trey? We're in the thick of the season. People are having the same conversations over and over about Apple TV. People are about the pitch, about the stadium experience. What's your take on the vibes lately?
Well, I'm going to skip all that, and we're going to talk about the most important injury that happened this weekend, and it's not James Sands. It's one Mallory Pugh Swanson.
Yeah. You're right. I had this on my... I thought about it this week, and then I forgot to add it to the list. Tragic. Really tragic. Jesus.
Just the most tragic. Could it be more tragic? It could. I don't want to think about it, but it could not get much more tragic. Mallory Pugh has been someone plagued with injuries over the last few years. Just like the worst snake-bitten shit. Traded around the league. And then she finally is healthy for a season. And she puts up MVP fucking numbers. Like, she was the third best player in the league last year. Maybe second. Honestly, I think she was the second best player in the league last year. And the best player in the league last year played opposite her on the wing for the U.S. Women's National Team. It was like, we had it set. We're going into the World Cup with the two best wingers in NWSL starting for us, and perhaps two of the best wingers in the world, playing at their peak, in their prime. And the fact that in the very last camp, she fucking blows her knee, it sucks. 100 days out from the World Cup. It's just fucking brutal. Because that was the sure thing. You know? defense will be solid. It's not like necessarily 100% who's going to play in each position, but we'll be okay. Goalkeeper, honestly, there's plenty of good goalkeepers in the pool. But forwards were where we're the most set. You get Alex Morgan, you have Ashley Hatch at center forward. Either one of them, put them in, money. On the wings, Sophia Smith, one of the best players in the world. Mal Pugh, Swanson, one of the best players in the world. We're set. We were going to have the best forward line in the World Cup. Midfield was the weird sticky part. And now Mal Pugh goes down, and it sucks because now, like, for, you know, whatever you want to say about whatever, I love the idea of, like, black girl magic finding its way onto this team. Like, the fact that we go from, like, Rapinoe and Heath, like, who are phenomenal and the biggest fucking shoes to fill, right? Like, just two of the sauciest fucking wingers this team has ever seen. And the fact that, like, we are six black girl magic wingers deep on, in those positions is, like, cool. I love it. I love to see it. Especially, oh, fuck, that's something we could talk about, if not just laugh at the schadenfreude of what happened in the Red Bulls game this weekend. But, you know, it was cool to see. And then, you know, she goes down. So right now, like, we're in this weird but exciting moment of, like, I think it's Trinity Rodman's time. I think she is, I think it's a little too early to throw her into the spotlight, but if there's one player I trust to take advantage of it, it is not even old enough to drink. Trinity fucking Rodman mm-hmm. is probably going to start in the World Cup, and that's fascinating, and that's cool, and I'm excited. I hope she starts, by the way. I hope we're not. I think that's the choice. But it sucks because she's 20 years old, and like, and frankly, Mal Pugh is a little bit better than her at this current moment, even though Rodman's ceiling is through the fucking roof. So
talk about that. It's exciting to get to see. What do you look for in a Trinity Rodman start? You know, what does she bring that, like, that makes her your target?
Just, like, the one thing is, like, the physicality she brings. I think everyone, like, wants to say, speed, 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 speed. Oh, she's fast. Ooh, the counterattack. But I think a lot of that was on display because Washington played a lot of those balls over the top, direct play, like, just fucking hoof it to Trinity Rodman and see what happens. There's a lot of moments where she's shying doing that. But what she can do on the ball with, like, even her back to the goal is, like, her body feints, her ability to push off these big defenders, which is going to be huge when it comes to the World Cup. Like, she's in one of the rougher leagues in the world, and now she's going to be able to, like, take what she's learned and put it on an international stage. Like, it's going to be, and she's, like, explosive. If you want to talk about, like, I hate comparing women's players to men's players, but for the sake of our audience, like, the explosiveness that, like, GP brings from the wing, like, you never know if a banger's going to happen. That's what she brings. And Mal Pugh is more like, you know, direct to the goal. I'm going to fucking score. I'm getting in the box. I can set up and let a midfielder come and help. And then boom, instant overload because she's so solid on the ball. Well, Trinity's like more chaos, but in a good way. Organized chaos. Mm-hmm. And it just sucks that Mal Pugh doesn't get this opportunity. Because, like, this was the time. And fucking sucks.
I'm sorry.
Anyways,
I'm sorry to you and your wife and your future wife. Your future in the bigamy arrangement.
No, I'm beyond it. We're beyond. That's so 2015, 2016. If she was old enough back then. Hold on. Hold on.
Sure, pull back. Edit.
We probably started talking about it 2017, Mal Pugh. This has always been a Mal Pugh podcast.
Yes.
Which makes it even worse. But no, she's with Dansby Swanson, and they look so beautiful together, and fairy tale ending. She got her Prince Charming. We're happy for her. We've moved on.
Good. Congratulations to you.
It's so embarrassing. What am I, a child? I'm in my 30s.
Yeah, but you know, Jacob. We're millennials, so we have arrested development syndrome for as long as we want.
I'll leave it to you. Do you want to just get right to Nashville?
I genuinely
which we don't have
do.
Much to say about? Okay, so Red Bulls racist player. He can fuck himself.
Yeah, this shit. I mean, we should do like 2 minutes on it. We can talk a little bit about what happened. It's nice not to. It's nice not for that to be in our backyard, you know, at the yes. moment. But it is literally in the same namesake city, so it never goes away, folks. I guess. No, I didn't. Sorry, I took a big bite of ice cream before I launched in, but I think that as the league grows, and the league is growing, not just in terms of franchises, but also in terms of popularity, you know, we continue to be on pace to really hit a tremendous profile in this country, which is only going to make us more susceptible to fan groups and to players and to perspectives that are there just to wrestle your jimmies. You know what I mean? There's a kind of like, there's a desire to wrestle your jimmies and that like, and a real just sort of like grotesqueness and a fucking like churlish fucking behavior that you have to stand up and speak out against every opportunity you fucking get. We've tried to do our best to do that on this podcast. So you've been a very dogged force for good in this way. And so now we can look across the Hudson and say, hey, knock it off. Stop that.
Oh, man. Struber. No, man, if the front office didn't have to approve our TIFOs, we could have had some great ones. Oh, man. Dante. And of course, Vanazier, the player who did this. Red Bull's record signing, by the way. You would think it's Thierry Henry. No. It's this guy. And he's gone from Vanazier to Clanazier.
Nice. Very instant. Good.
Cool. We're done with that. Struber can fuck himself.
Shall we talk about Nashville?
Sure.
What do you see in Nashville ascending?
Ascending? Are they, though? I mean, they're getting results ish. I think, frankly, like, okay, we played them in the first game of the season. This is our first repeat offender, and they beat us 2-0. I know it felt like a long time ago, but we didn't have James Sands. We had Justin Hack starting. We didn't have Santi Rodriguez. We had Thiago Andrade starting. He's gone. So if James Sands can go, like, obviously we have an improved lineup on the field, and that helps. You want a James Sands against Hany Mukhtar. That's what we were just saying. We didn't have really anyone to throw at him in the last time we played them. And the thing is that I think that they're in a similar place to us. Since that game, they are... NYCFC, outside of the two good home games, has been one of the most boring teams. Because we can't get things done on the offensive side. if there's a team that's even more boring, it's Nashville, because they have an even more solid defense and an even more limp attack than us. Like, imagine. So we're kind of colliding in a very similar place. The game's going to be at Citi Field. It's another home game. I hope that helps in this way. I think we need to win. It's going to be a lot of just like, it's going to be a battle of attrition. I think the team needs to be much better in possession. It's going to be very different than how we played Atlanta. Like, we had a lot of the ball against Atlanta, sure, but we're going to need to be a little more decisive if we want to be, again, as coach wants to say, like, impose our style and play our game. Like, this is the game to do that, because Nashville is going to want to do that as well. And we're more capable of, in putting pressure on a Nashville than on Atlanta. So can we do that? I want to see, because they are, Willis is a very solid goalkeeper. They have Zimmerman, of course, scored on us last game. Set pieces and fouls are going to be the problem. And you know, I think it was a little fluky. We talked about it, like, that Nashville game didn't feel like 2-0. We probably shouldn't have lost 2-0. So can we rectify that in this game is going to be huge. This is going to be a big moral thing It's going to be a big
moral. Yeah, I hear you.
Morale.
Or a moral victory. We're picking up what you're putting down, me and the fans, Trey.
Okay.
Do you think that we have the moral fortitude to do it?
I'm not sure. I guess we'll confirm via tweet whenever, and you can follow us, you know where, when we say it in 5 seconds. But I believe Pellegrini might already be at the suspension point for his yellows. I'm not sure. I think he has a yellow in every single game, and if not, every game but one. If it's every game, I think he's already at the suspension point. So that would be okay. I mean, we'd probably start GP.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, but then we can see what happens.
This match, basically.
Well, I want to see what happens when Pellegrini's not on the field. What the press looks like, because that kind of 4-2-2-2 press that we've been running has worked super well, and that's partly because Santi's been doing well, getting at the highest level, but it's also been because Pellegrini's been good at pressing the outlets. So I want to see what that looks like if GP's in. Because the one thing people bench players for, it's not pressing when you're a pressing team. And can GP do that? Because if there is reasons he was benched outside of poor play, it's probably something like that. So now's the time. And, you know, who fucking knows? Maybe Andras Jason starts. I don't know. I would like to see GP and then keep everything the same if we can. How do you feel about James Sands, captain's armband 2 games in a row?
I think it's delightful. I think it's a tactic that I approve of to make James Sands feel like he is in control of this team. Like he can dictate the style of play. Like he has eyes on the players around him, which is one of the things that we've identified that he has a talent for on this side. He is, despite his youth, a veteran of this side, of the coaching staff working here. He should feel like he has, if not authority, right, at least a position where he can direct people to where they're supposed to be. He can provide a sense of cohesiveness that I'd like to see him retain. I think it's good. And I think it's more, I think to your point earlier about just needing to get some fucking goals, I think moving that armband from Cheneau as default to Sands as default in some quiet way conveys that importance. Do you know what I mean? Our job is not to be rock solid. Our job is to be inventive. Our job is to be multifaceted. And our job is to create opportunities. That's what that change says to me.
Yeah, I do find it weird to have a shuffle things around and have leadership council and things like that. I don't know. It's weird. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying it's weird.
I think it's, well, you know, it's not exactly providing the results, but I think it's fun. I think it's a,
it's fun.
I think it's a fun game to see. It's a fun coaching game. It probably doesn't have an effect at all. It's the kind of thing that when I'm directing, you know, I find really appealing, which is just like, let's see what this does. Let's see what this does. These quiet little changes, these cues that like send things off in unexpected directions. But how much value is unexpectedness on a team like this? On a season like this? I don't know. Trey, where do you tweet? Oh, no. Oh, hold on. Trey, what's the scoreline?
1-0 for us. What about you?
I'm gonna say... Y'all know when I predict a draw, it's really a loss. I'm going to say 1-1 draw.
You think we're going to lose at home?
I don't. The reason I asked, Trey, is because I don't feel like we've got it.
Okay. I don't blame you.
There's a space for recovery here. But I don't know that we've solved. I agree. Like, I don't know that we have solved the problem that Nashville posed to us. When I look at the lineup then and I look at the lineup now, where's the fix? Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Where do you tweet at?
Yeah. Trey Fillmore, what about you?
At Jake Beckhard, and we both tweet at Blue Balls Pod.
Blue Balls Pod.
You can find us there. The Cash App is also where you can drop a dollar in the tip jar. In the tip jar, load up Blue Balls NYCFC on your Cash App and help us keep the lights on. Or click over to our Twitter and go check out our merch. Buy a little merch to support the podcast. We love it, and we love you. Since we've been labeled as state-sponsored media, we will be leaving Twitter, but we will be returning with five dummy run accounts, actually. They're all going to be John Mueller parody accounts. Parody and also just straight-up phishing accounts so that we can gather athletic credit card information from you all who want to read that article that I mentioned earlier. Thanks so much for listening. We'll catch you next week. Goodbye.
Bye.